A beacon of hope. That's how Gardaí last week described the woman whose evidence in court led to the conviction of her violent and abusive partner for coercive control. In the first trial of its kind, Daniel Kane was sentenced to 12 and a half years for assault, intimidation and engaging in behaviour that was controlling or coercive of his partner. The woman at the centre of the case, who hasn't been named, said she might be dead or in a vegetative state if doctors and Gardaí had not intervened. The doctor who raised the alarm was Niamh Collins, a consultant in emergency medicine at James Connolly Hospital, Blanchardstown in Dublin. Dr. Collins has been telling me about her involvement in the case and when she first became concerned for the woman's safety.
We have a system in the hospital where we look at notes of people who leave before an element of their care is completed. And I became aware of the lady involved through that process. And without going into her specific details, there were red flags that concerned me. There are patients I have cared for over the years who have died as a result of domestic violence. And I was very aware that interventions need to happen earlier rather than later, and I didn't want what had happened to other people to happen in this lady's situation. And I happened to be on call one of the days that she came in, and based on the information I had, I felt compelled that I needed to kind of step up and kind of go the extra mile on her behalf, because I felt the control that was exerted on her was enormous, and that really limited her choices. And I suppose from an individual case point of view, that's probably the extent that I would say on her individual case. Mm-hmm. But coercive control is a very common presentation to emergency departments.
You said that I think there was evidence given in court, and you just alluded to it yourself, that this woman had been presented herself to the hospital on a number of occasions.
That's correct. And when you look at the cases of people who have been seriously injured by domestic abuse and you review their notes and their charts, you'll see sometimes they present with what seems like relatively innocuous injuries, a cut, a burn, a bruise. And the pattern starts often as relatively mild and then can escalate over time or quite rapidly, depending on the case. Mm.
And when you talk about red flags, presumably that's one of the red flags that would alert you, somebody repeatedly coming in for a treatment as a result of injuries. Are there other warning signs?
There are indeed. When you chat to the person involved, you look at the time of night that they present, the time of the day, it's frequently at night. You look at the delay between when the injury or illness happened and the time they took to attend the department. You see if the pattern of injury is consistent with the story that they tell, or actually is the pattern of injury a defence type injury. You look and see if there's injuries of different times. And then in the course of talking with them, you try and establish what the home situation is like. You look and see what's the financial situation. There's cases that I can remember clearly where women with well-paid jobs and their own bank account have ended up without a bank account and without their job. And when they go to the shop to buy the groceries, they are given the exact money and their receipt is checked and the change in their purse is checked. One of the groups that we'd be very worried about would be migrant groups, particularly where the person affected's visa is dependent on the perpetrator's visa, and they feel that they don't have a voice in the country, they don't have a legal basis to be in the country in their own right.
Of course, because of the coercive nature of this, the intimidation, it's also the case, isn't it, that very often these women, they don't want to draw attention to this, they don't want to go to the Gardaí, they're afraid.
I think that's a well-made point, and I think from the outside when we look in, we say, well, why doesn't he or she do this? But what you have to understand is that a pattern of behaviour, of undermining, a constant undermining of the individual's self-worth and a constant undermining of their ability to do anything effectively. So they are told that they are stupid, worthless, incompetent, and that they can't complete on anything. And then as an outsider, we just ask them, why can't they do something absolutely enormous, and maybe don't understand that the stakes are so high. Their children may be happy in the local school, and if they were to move to a family member's house, the children could no longer go to that school. Mm. There's an awful lot of very practical reasons, and there's also this, the controller has paralyzed them, and
so
their sense of self and their ability to get themselves out of that position.
So how then does someone in your position persuade them to get past that fear, the fear of further violence, of intimidation, to take this step, to be as the guard?
It is a very real event that lots of times we know that the person we speak to won't, based on that interaction with the health service, change their circumstance immediately. And I think we have to be very accepting that they mightn't be ready or they mightn't be able to. And one message I would have for any person affected by coercive control or domestic violence is that emergency departments are a place of safety. You don't have to have an injury or an illness or to have hurt yourself to attend the emergency department. If you feel unsafe, you can come and we will support people. And we want the public to know that emergency departments are a place of safety.
We know that there have been increasing numbers, a significant increase in calls to domestic abuse helplines as a result of the COVID lockdown. Is the pandemic making a bad situation worse in your experience?
It's a double-edged sword. I think for the individuals in those trapped situations, I feel whatever the rest of us who are in safe situations feel trapped by this, I can't imagine what the people affected by domestic violence are. But the silver lining that we have is that because we have a no-visitors policy now, it is much easier to have a direct and honest conversation with the person involved without the perpetrator having an entitlement to be in with the patient.
It's been reported that there are, I think, something like 50 coercive control cases currently under investigation by Gardaí. So what's your message to fellow members of the medical profession, people in the community providing healthcare, even friends and neighbours who see something that just isn't quite right?
I feel that coercive control is common in all aspects of society, and for all of us to be very open-minded and not to prejudge the circumstance. And my feeling is that as a society we need to recognise it, and when we might be in a social circumstance and somebody is belittled or put down, is to say to yourself, first of all, I didn't like what happened there. I think we need to call the behaviour out, so when we see some person exerting a control over another, is to turn around and say, what you said was mean. And then I think something that in Irish society we're possibly not good at is where we hold each other to account and actually say to the person, did you intend to be hurtful when you did that? Because from my observation, it was hurtful. And I think all of us in society have a duty. So if we say I'm out with my girlfriends and one of them keeps getting a phone call from her partner throughout the night, that could be coercive control. So if we're out with friends and we witness that happen, is to turn around and say, is everything okay? That seemed like an excessive amount of calls. Is there an emergency or could you not answer? And if the answer is, oh, it's easier to talk to him, then I think it might be the start of a conversation to say, what would happen if you didn't answer him? Or, you know, if we had a friend who was always bright and bubbly and gregarious and then they've become quite withdrawn and quiet, is to, on a one-to-one basis, just say, is everything okay? Part of the controller's behaviour is sometimes they're wonderfully charming and in great form and in a great mood, but they may flip very quickly. And it's that nervousness that the person has at home of whether they'll flip. And I think they tread on eggshells at home because they never know when the mood would sour and either verbal abuse or insulting behaviour or violence may happen.
Dr. Niamh Collins, consultant in emergency medicine at James Connolly Hospital, Blanchardstown in Dublin. And for anyone affected by the issues discussed in that interview, there is help available. The 24-hour confidential Women's Aid helpline is on 1800 341 900. That's the 24-hour confidential Women's Aid helpline, 1800 341 900. Men's Aid offers support 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, on 01555. 01554 3811, 01554 3811, and we'll tweet those numbers and put them on our other social platforms.